Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
We get into another one of our very, very interesting interviews. You've been hearing a lot about them. They've been blazing a trail. They've been bringing closure to a lot of families whose loved ones have gone missing, have found themselves the victims of very unfortunate acts. I'm speaking of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team. Household name, as I said, they've been featured prominently in some of our most high-profile incidents. And joining us now this morning to give us a bit of insight into exactly who, what, why, when, how about the Hunters Search and Rescue Team is the gentleman at the helm. His name should be a well-known one. He was very active in national affairs some time ago. And of course, I'll allow him to tell you guys more about him. But let's welcome to our program our special guest this morning, Captain of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team, Valance Rambarat. Mr. Rambarat, good morning to you. Welcome to our program.
Good morning, Satish. And it's a pleasure to be on your program this morning. Let me just wish you all World Radio Day. I know it was yesterday and it's a bit late. And it's a pleasant good morning to you and your crew and your listenership.
Well, thank you so much for the sentiments. And it's nice to have you with us here this morning. I've been wanting to have this discussion for quite some time because the group, Hunters Search and Rescue Team, they seem to be all over the place. And whenever there's someone in need, you know, in days gone by, I don't mean to trivialize, but they say, who are you going to call? Well, we're not calling the Ghostbusters. We are calling Hunter Search and Rescue Team. And you guys seem to be able to do things that the authorities can't. But let me give you the opportunity to familiarize our listeners with you. Tell us a bit about yourself, some of the things that you've been involved in. And then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of Hunter's Search and Rescue Team. Go right ahead.
All right. Valance Rambarat is the name. My hometown is in Rio Claro, and this is the place where I grew up. My family has a hunting background, and of course, I think many listeners would know that my brother, Clarence Rambarat, was involved in the politics. And I have a background in education. I'm a career teacher, principal, and I recently retired as a school supervisor. And my passion really is to look after the growth and development of the children of the nation. I'm a patriot. And when Hunters Search and Rescue Team was founded, I thought that was a way of giving back to Trinidad and Tobago, having recently retired. I am all for national development, and I think that if each citizen could play a role in helping our nation to go forward, it will redound to the benefit of the nation. And so this is how I tend to give back to my country, and all members of the team have the same position, that we do this for free and we try to assist families going forward with those when loved ones go missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you this. The service that you all are providing free of charge, and I'm correct by saying free of charge, right?
Yes, it is free of charge.
The service that you all are providing to citizens in need is yeoman service. You can't put a dollar value on that because you all step in from what I've read and, you know, what you hear and so on, and in my discussions with you as well, you all step in at a time when people are at their wits' end, when it seems as though there's nobody else who can help them. You all come in, and in many instances, you all are able to be successful in locating the individual, whether they're deceased or whatever else. You've been able to do that. Tell me a bit about the group itself. Who, the people involved, Where do they come from? How do people get involved with the Hunter Search and Rescue Team?
Yes, Satish, I didn't want to disappoint you all this morning with this interview, but let me just say that as I speak to you, our mission is underway. At 11 p.m. last night, I activated the team and they left their homes. Those who live far, like Pinal, Rio Claro, Tablan, they left their homes at 5:30 a.m. this morning. I was up at 4 a.m. for the wake-up call. Given the mission go ahead, there is a family in distress. And I don't want to go public on the circumstances as yet, because there is a protocol for us to follow with respect to the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service. So I will follow those protocols after the interview. And shortly thereafter the interview, I'll be joining my teammates on the mission. And the team really is made up of, currently we have 24 members, we have 4 females and 20 males, we have 4 units. We have a Tobago unit headed by Kester Jerry, we have the Northern unit headed by Desi Simon, we have the Central unit headed by Ramnath Hulk Ramcharita, and we have the Southern unit headed by Mr. Johnny Maraj. And the team came about circumstantially. We were there was the Andrea Barrett search, and I wanted to become involved in that. I made a call to the Commissioner of Police to ask him if hunters could join in the search. He agreed to the request, and on February the 2nd, we gathered at the Sangre Grande Police Station under the watchful eyes of the TTPS. And there it is, they began learning about searching skills and how we transfer the hunting skills to searching. And that really was a formation. That was the first day we met. It was 13 of us, mostly hunters from Northeastern Trinidad and Tobago. Subsequent to that, not all the hunters up there stayed on with the team, and we were able to recruit as we went about our searches. And now we have members spread across the country, from Sandy Grande to Digo Martin to Chaguanas to Barrackpore, Pinal, Rio Claro, Tablan, and Tobago. And with respect to recruitment, we currently have 2 persons, Vishnu Ramdial and Kuru Kuva, undergoing some training with us. We have a 6-month training period, and you are expected to go on missions with us. And after that 6-month period, after discussion with the team, they are then given full membership, and they are given their full search kits, and they join the team as full-fledged members.
I have a couple questions. One is, what is the relationship, legal and otherwise, with the police service? Because when you have persons who go missing, you have to report them to the police that they're missing. And then the police is supposed to launch a search or rescue, whatever else is the job of the police service. I don't want to say the police service is abdicating its responsibilities, but search and rescue definitely is doing a lot of work that people are saying should be done by the police service. What's the relationship between Hunter Search and Rescue and the police?
Well, it has been an excellent working relationship. Our mission says clearly that we will work with law enforcement to assist families whose loved one go missing. And the relationship has been an excellent one. Our first direct contact is with the anti-kidnapping unit led by ASP Daryl Ramdas. Based on last night's distress call, he has already been alerted. He has all the information, and that is what we do. We exchange information. Satish, let's look at the role of the police, because people ask us, they come to us and they say, listen, you all are better to the police. The truth is really is like comparing bananas to oranges. The police has an investigative role to play. And their approach is probably different to us. In addition to this, when we look at the statistics through 2019, 2021, 22, and into 23. In 96% of the cases, there are persons who would have voluntarily gone missing. And it is not an offense to go missing. What the police service do really is to render assistance to these families. And because no offense is committed, you would find that all over the world, a lower priority is placed on in terms of resource allocation to locate these persons. And this is where we come in. We apply our resources, our skills, and we work with the families. Unfortunately, not every case has a happy ending. We have homicides in terms of hanging, suicides, drownings, very few natural deaths, and in some cases, murder. And with respect to our relationship with the police, how we've been doing it in the past, for the past few years, is that we've been red flagging some of these cases, like the one that we currently on this morning. That has been red flagged and sent straight to the top of the police service. They've all been, some have been informed. Senior soup of the division has been informed. The local police station has been informed. And what the role we place to take these cases, we red flag, send it straight to the top of the burner, and so that resources can be activated and the police presence is there.
No, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with all the way it works, because I think the police service, and this is my opinion, the police service should have a greater role in finding people who are missing. I take your point about 90-something percent of them voluntarily go missing and they show up eventually. But the police, the job of the police is when they identify people, they find people, or they find bodies or whatever else, one critical component of that is the preservation of evidence. And how is that dealt with by the Hunter Search and Rescue Team? Because I remember in my television days, and this is a real case that I'm going to give people. We were coming back from an assignment, and it was like about 8 or 9 o'clock in the night, and just after the Beetham dump, there was a body on the side of the road. A man's body was on the side of the road, and I saw it, and I said to the cameraman who was driving, I said, a man looked up a body on the side of the road. He didn't believe me. And we went, because I wanted to stop the car and come back around. And we went back to the office and we called the officers that we used to deal with. And we said, well, look, so-and-so is the case. And they said, they just got the report. So we went back. And when we went back, I spoke to the senior officer and I said, well, we were here and we saw it and this and that and the next. And this is the exact words I was told. Well, it's a good thing you didn't stop. Because if you had stopped and you had seen the body and you was there and you reported, you would have been suspect number one. And that's how they say it works. The person who identifies or finds a body or whatever else is treated as the primary suspect until they are eliminated. So those semantics have been worked out, I'm assuming, because you would have been in contact with the police service saying you're going to look for this person or whatever else. You find a body. What are your protocols when it comes to preserving the evidence around the site?
Okay, I believe your example is a good one, because traditionally in Trinidad and Tobago, a lot of these bodies, it's left are discovered by farmers, hunters, pedestrians, drivers driving vehicles. And you raise a very important point, and we've been able to sort this out with the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, and in terms of our position. We've been trained and we know how to approach a crime scene. The police, we've been on joint searches with them and we've demonstrated clearly to them how we approach a crime scene. And so once we spot, and we use the word spot, we don't go close to these bodies at all. Once we spot the body, our first job is to call the Trinidad and Tobago Police service. Secondly, we've worked out that arrangement in terms of what you just spoke about, that is with respect to being the number one suspect. We assist the police, and that has been made clear to them, and we approach the entire exercise as assistance to the police. And that is why I spoke earlier of certain protocols we have to follow. And we even joined the police on after situation exercises. We had two thus far. After Andrea Barrett's body was found, we did what was called the Aripo sweep. We led that sweep to check for if there were other bodies in the area. And I remember with the Kimani Francis, the two-year-old boy who drowned in Point 14, we were called back by the homicide squad to go through an entire area looking for evidence. So we have that relationship worked out. It was a concern to the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service when we started, but we worked out the protocols and it's no longer an issue.
How many cases since the formation of Hunter Search and Rescue, do you have that kind of data? How many cases you've assisted with and you've been successful in finding persons and that kind of thing? You have that data available?
Yeah, I'm a stickler, I'm a teacher, educator, and a researcher, so you know I wouldn't make joke with that.
Tell us.
Basically, well, we started, the formation of the team was on the February the 2nd, 2021. You'd recall that was the year of the pandemic. And we had 38 missions, and unfortunately, we had 11 unhappy endings. That means that 11 bodies were recovered. In 2022, Satish, there was an explosion. It started off, and at the end of the day, we were able to assist 242 families with persons who've gone missing, and 21 bodies were recovered. And in 2023, again, this year started off with a bang. Thus far in January, we've had 4 bodies recovered, that being someone who was found in the Chatham mud volcano. Mm-hmm. We had a hunter who got a heart attack in the Rio Claro area. We had a drowning in Tairico, and we also, just a few days ago, recovered a body in the Guayaguari area. And so it's 4 thus far for this year. And we're continuing to see this explosion of missing persons in the country. I don't know if it's a post-pandemic issue. And in 2021, Satish, we had 4 suicides, four by hanging. One was a murder-suicide, and the 3 others were as a result of depression, I guess. But I'm still not sure if it's just a post-pandemic explosion that we're still experiencing. But it speaks to a lot of what's going on in the society.
Yeah.
And these are some serious societal issues.
I'm sure that it does. Where the numbers that you're giving us, and I mean, we are not foreign to the crime statistics. We hear them all the time. Here's a question. Had it not been for Hunter Search and Rescue and your ability to go to some of these places that police probably ain't going or they never thought of going or whatever else, do you think some of these families would have been able to get the closure that your group has been able to bring to them?
No, they would not have been able to achieve closure. And I think that is the role we play. We're able to get to any vegetative area in Trinidad and Tobago, any terrain, and do detailed searches. And I believe in most of the cases, if we were not able to recover those bodies, they would not have, the families would not have been able to achieve closure. With respect to the Guayaguari recovery, this gentleman went to make a Coke and lime, and it was either that he walked out on land or would have gone to the sea. Satish, we would have searched approximately 150 acres of that isthmus peninsula called Point Galeota first. Mm. It took us from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Now, that's a lot of coverage with a team of 12 persons, right? We put our backs into the work. We searched the entire area, mangrove, roadways, verges, box trains, and then we eliminated the land and went back 7 a.m. the next morning to find his body washed ashore on the seashore in Guayaguayari. We've searched in areas that are difficult to access, very, very difficult to access. And were it not for us, I firmly believe that these families would not have achieved closure.
Mm. We need to take a couple quick messages. When we get back, I'll be opening the phone lines, encouraging our listeners to be a part of the conversation. For those of you who joined us midway, we are speaking this morning with the captain of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team. That is Valance Rambarat. A couple messages when we get back, taking your calls. Send your messages to 3061065. Our numbers, 6273223 and 6252257. Stay with us.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Land and Fisheries is continuing its vaccination drive against rabies. We're asking all sheep, goat and cattle farmers to call 398-3515 to book an appointment with our veterinary health providers, who will come to your location at absolutely no cost. Did you know in Trinidad and Tobago that rabies is more commonly seen in livestock? That's why we need your help in alleviating this threat.
Hey there, are you someone who always has something to say and share with the world? Do you love expressing your thoughts and opinions on a variety of topics? If so, we want you to join the Freedom 106.5 FM family. At Freedom 106.5, we believe in the power of open dialogue and the exchange of ideas. That's why we're always looking for new voices to join our community and share their perspectives. Whether you're an expert in a particular field or have a unique point of view, Freedom FM wants to hear from you. So if you've got something to say and want to be a part of a supportive and engaging community, send us an email with your ideas to freedom106.5fm@gmail.com. We can't wait to hear from you and welcome you to the Freedom 106.5 FM family. Freedom 106.5 FM takes you deep into the game of football with an all-new show called Offside. Offside. Join host Terry Fenwick every Monday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. for the football trends, banter, analysis on and off the field.
Offside. This is Terry Fenwick, former Crystal Palace, Queen's Park Rangers and Tottenham Hotspur Premier League player, former England international and Pro League coach. I know what it takes to win on and off the field of play.
Offside is packed with expert guests, and most of all, you get to engage with the team on the air.
Hello, this is Adrian Romain, former Trinidad Tobago Soca Warriors team manager and Pro League manager. I know what it takes to win. Every Monday on Freedom 106.5 FM, we will be speaking our mind on Offside.
Offside, the ultimate football show where the action never stops and the goals keep coming. Every Monday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Land and Fisheries is continuing its vaccination drive against rabies. We're asking all sheep, goat, to call 398-3515 to book an appointment with our veterinary health providers, who will come to your location at absolutely no cost. Did you know in Trinidad and Tobago that rabies is more commonly seen in livestock? That's why we need your help in alleviating this threat.
Wake up your morning with the Morning Rumble on Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back. 15 minutes before 8 with us, Captain of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team, that's Valance Rambarat. Take a couple of your calls. 627-3223, 625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Tabish.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to your guest here, Mr. Rambarat. It is clear to me that listening after Mr. Rambarat gave out that data he has here, that there needs to be a unit in the CTPS, a new unit, in terms of rescue and searching. Because if you have an organization here using private citizens who are going length and breadth and bringing some relief to families, the question is, if you have a resources and initial national security is getting the largest sum of money, why isn't there a unit in terms of carrying out similar exercises?
Okay.
Okay. Yep. Dr. Anderson. Yep.
Thank you so much. Is that a discussion, Mr. Amber, is that a discussion you've ever had with the authorities of formalizing the organization to the point where you can or would be funded? And if you are funded, would you be able to do much more than you're doing now?
Satish, your caller asked a very interesting question. And it has to do with how the public services organized. Take, for instance, when it comes to searching, you have the Coast Guard who will handle the sea searches. You will have there's a riverine unit attached to the TTPS that will handle the river, some of the river searches. You mm-hmm. have the fire services search and rescue unit. And the problem really is these are silo organizations, agencies across ministries. It takes time and effort to activate these units. And when you compare that to what we do, we received a distress call at 11 p.m. last night, and the team was activated and on its way at between 5 and 5:30 a.m. this morning. They know what are the objectives. They understand. They know the location. They have every possible information to commence that operation this morning. Lunches have already been organized, refreshments in terms of drinks, water, and so forth. All that has been activated. Their safety equipment is with them, and they are on the road very early. And I think that is the difference. In the public service, for instance, you have shift systems, you have officers, you know, leaving work at different times, and we able to understand what are the problems. So I think going forward, you know, yes, they will have policy changes and things that could facilitate a better organized search.
But
unit,
okay.
That is really
you're trying to be
in all areas.
You're trying to be very diplomatic in how you treat with the thing, and I understand the need for diplomacy in speaking about an organization that you're going to have to work closely with. Let me see if I could put it in layman's term. Anything we have state interest in is always cumbersome and riddled with red tape and bureaucracy, and you really can't get the job done.
I was going to answer the second part of your question.
Okay.
I do not want, and this is my conversation with the team,
mm-hmm.
for the state to lay its hands on us. So with respect to funding and those sort of things, we will make do, and we will do our own training, and we will continue to fund ourselves. We're self-funded, and we make do as a non-governmental organization with very little. It takes very little. You know what we have that works for us, Satish? We have passion. We have passion, we're dedicated, and we're extremely diligent.
Okay.
I have spent a day in the field with just two bottles, canisters of water on my back. I am a coffee person. I will have my thermos with coffee, and I will have a pack of crisps in my bag, and I could go whole day. That characterizes the determination of this team in getting the job done.
Yeah.
And it is for all members of the team, all 24 members. They're extremely dedicated and passionate. And even though they work, at any given time that a call is made, you get 11, 12 coming out to on missions. And that has been consistent since the formation of the team.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Amberet, and good morning, Satish.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Amberet, regardless to your humble nature, I trust that the state can see what you are doing and it is tangibly recognized. But that aside, Mr. Rambert, I am more concerned right now with the immediate situation of the fishermen who went missing. I believe that our cell phone companies ought to ensure that there's enabled reach outside of our borders, at least a 7-mile limit, so that men out there can have access to the cell phone. I believe that the fishermen are quite truant because they are supposed to have had a robust organization, one that allowed communication, whether by radio, shortwave, whatever it is, to know where the members are. GPS can tell you where you are, what you are doing, what you are fishing, and all of that. And fishermen are supposed to be licensed to go out on the sea because we cannot have this situation happening all of the time, with families being in distress. And we just do the same thing over and over and expecting that the result is going to be different. And listen to your comments.
Okay. Thank you so much, Eric. Suggestions to deal with these things with fishermen. Go right ahead.
Yeah, and that tragedy that is unfolding in Guayaguayari is rather unfortunate. I'm in direct communications with the four families. And as you know, the Miaro Guayaguayari communities are closely knitted, and it's an entire the entire seaboard on the eastern side of Trinidad. And should I say the southern parts of Trinidad, they really emotionally distressed over what took place. The fact of the matter is that fishing really remains unregulated. There's a fishery bill. MP Rushton Parry pointed out that to me recently, and I want to say he has been very active in assisting these families. Before the parliament, before a joint select parliament, and we don't know when the work would be finished to bring that piece of legislation or to bring that entire piece of legislation before the parliament for ratification, where you will see a number of changes with respect to the fishing industry. You talk about the cellular service, but there is sea to shore radio that they should have good safety equipment on board. They should check out of a legitimate port. They should have a plan in terms of their route, their destination, and the time that they believe they should be out of port and the return time. All these will assist in reducing some of these tragedies we see unfolding from time to time within the fishing industry. So it is largely unregulated. With respect to the four families, I know that, let me just give an update. We know there's communication with Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and they're working closely to get that one body that was recovered on the Venezuelan coastline back to Trinidad, and they're working assiduously for the searches to continue on the Venezuelan coastline. I think it is to the credit of the family, and I played a part in that, in meeting with them and saying, listen, this is what is in front of us. What do you want? What do we want the authorities to do? And the families and I came up with this plan that the search should be focused on the northern Venezuelan coastline. I think we were accurate in that. We were on the button, and that caused the authorities to activate searches there, and well, at least one body was recovered thus far. It's unfortunate that Hunter's search and rescue team couldn't cross the border and do some detailed search of that mangrove area, but we have to leave it up to the Venezuelan authorities.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call to take us up to the news. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Rambarat. And I must be congratulating to your group because you are very impressive and your rate of success is extremely high. And probably, you know, especially in the forested areas, and as hunters, I like myself, you know the bush, where we're saying you know the bush well. But one wonders what the regiment, beside the police apart, the regiment, Trinidad and Tobago, who is trained in handling rough terrain and forested areas, if they are part, if they assist you in any way at all, right? And when you are, I wanted to ask about the funding, because no, you have addressed it, but it is no wonder that you would incur a lot of expenses, and probably you use your own support at times, you know, to fund yourself, right? So the last question asked, it may be an overreach, it might be too thing, but I still ask it anyway. I want to know if your group has any political association. That is the key question. I will listen up there.
No, I'm not too sure if you have time to answer all three, because we just have about 2.5 minutes again before the news, so you could probably pick one.
Quickly, Satish, I must say it's nice to hear from a hunter, right? And you're asking me about the inclusion of the Defense Force and stuff in these exercises. And as a hunter, you would know that generally the rest of the population, they are afraid of trap guns and snakes, including the Mapipi, right? And hunters, we are not afraid of the trap guns. We could negotiate the trap guns and the venomous snakes in the forest. And there is a general fear within the rest of the population for entering our forest areas and stuff. But I do agree with you, the Defense Force, they highly trained in terms of the terrain of the land, and there is a unit within the Defense Force. So like when hikers go missing, I know on the North Coast we met them on searches, and we've searched with them as well. With respect to the issue of politics, Satish should know that I was political in the period, in a time, it's a hat I wore, and I wore it with pride. And as you are aware, my brother is a former minister in this regime. But Valence Rembrandt has really looked at how we could contribute to Trinidad and Tobago. I'm from a family of educators. We are accustomed assisting people with their own personal growth and development. And the organization, Hunters Search and Rescue Team, is non-political. And even if you say I'm PNM, I always say it to everyone, well, then I have 24 UNC members with me. So it's non-political, and we work hard, and we would not enter we wouldn't allow any political dimension.
Yep.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm able to work with the MP of the Member of Parliament for Miaro. We're extremely good friends. He's a great guy, and these are the type of persons that we work with. I want to work with people who, you know.
Well, Mr. Rembrandt, I'm going to have to interrupt you here because news is next, but I don't think anyone can accuse your group of having a political agenda based on what we've seen, or having political influences or anything like that. I mean, we all have a history, and your political history is well known, your affiliations are well known, but I don't think it would be, anybody would be justified in saying, well, you see that Hunter Search and Group, you see them? Them is this and this, that and the next and the other. We'll continue the discussion right after the 8 o'clock news. There are some interesting messages, people wanting to know exactly how you all do things. We'll get to that, take a couple more of your calls. We are speaking with the captain of Hunter Search and Rescue Team, that's Valence Rembrandt. News is next on the Morning Rumble on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
3.5 minutes after 8. With us for a bit again, captain of the Hunter Search and Rescue Team, that's Valence Rembrandt. Taking some more of your calls on 627-3223, 625-2257. Your WhatsApp messages, send those to 306-1065. Somebody sent an interesting question. I'm assuming people are interested, curious about how you all do your things. And the question is simply this: how do you ensure you don't get lost during these searches?
That's simple. We have equipment with us. We use the GPS to keep track of our movements. And many of us are hunters like myself, and we have this inbuilt GPS in our heads, but we do have the navigation devices, both the Garmin type ones, and we have them on our phones as well. And we use the latest devices to keep track of our movements. So interestingly, we like to log our miles, and we like to see where we've been. We save the searches to ensure that if we have to go back in the area, we have already mapped out those areas.
Okay.
A lot of work goes in, Satish, into the teamwork in terms of planning. So I would, last night, we stayed up and do all the plans for the team in terms of maps, the rivers, whether it's hilly or not. And what I do is identify the search area. So the team is on its way to a mission this morning. They have all that information. Well, and they will get the job done.
Well, listening to you explain the process, there are people who would come to the conclusion, because they don't understand. They say, well, them boys and girls and they just jump in the gear and go walking in the bush. But it seems as though this is a more calculated, very, very precise operation than people give it credit for. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Satish.
Good morning.
Satish, I first want to congratulate your guests on the job that they are doing, and himself and his team. I think they are doing a wonderful job. Right. However, I have just a couple questions. One, have your team been funded by government or anyone else?
Well, you apparently missed, because we deal with that one already.
Okay, I probably missed it.
Move
all
on.
Right. Have your team or anyone else been have to appear in court as witnesses when you discover corpses?
Mm-hmm.
Or even kidnapped persons? And finally, and this is only a suggestion, right? Because I'm not quite sure how your registration is. Because if you are an incorporated organization, my advice is that you register, make an application to the police commissioner and the Minister of National Security to get legal authority to do what you're doing. Because there is a disconnect where, the motive is good, the objective is good, and so on, but you may not have the legal right to be doing these searches and so on. It is a bit ticklish. Something is missing.
Yeah, well, Karen Essential, you joined the program late, because we deal with all these things already, you know. The only one... Well, thank you so much for your call. The only one that I don't think we've dealt with is witness. Do you all need to appear as witnesses if you're first on the scene and you find a body and all that kind of thing?
Well, I dealt with that earlier in terms of we are assisting the police in this regard, and we've cleared that up so that once we spot a body, we make sure we call the police, so they are first to the scene to. Not for second to the scene to take over the crime scene. The other question he asked, and there's another dimension to this, Satish. We've done our research. When a loved one go missing, it falls on the family to begin the search. And the family has the right to call us to assist them in searching. In that Guayaguayari situation, scores of family members turned up. And they were thankful for us being there for them, because they didn't have a clue how to begin to search. They were just running around, not knowing what to do. And I had to gather them up and said, listen, you go with this member here, you go with this member here, you all go here, you all do this, you all do a road patrol. And so I was able to organize about 30 family members to work with us to complete this search. And with respect to legality, that is the approach we take. We are there for the families, and we go to them and we say, this is how we're organizing the search. If you have family members and they want to join us, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we conduct our searches. It's a family right to begin searching immediately.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. Naparima here. And good morning, Mr. Ramarat. You're doing a very good job, but just want to ask you two questions, if you could answer on the air or not. The fisherman body who they found in Venezuelan waters, I think, the boat was damaged. Could you say whether it was pirate attack. It's very funny. They should have known the area they're going to have a boat damage. And then the other surprising thing, the other question is, are you surprised that the body, I think it's one guy so far, right, went way down in Venezuela? And because I find it kind of funny there. So I don't know if it was a willfully attacked by pirate.
Okay, Naparima. We dealt with these matters. We had spoken to Mr. Rambarat on the case some time ago, and he said that there doesn't seem to be a pirate attack because certain things. Okay, thank you so much for your call. I don't know if there's anything you want to add, because we did deal with this before, that it was, well, from all indicators, it didn't seem to be a pirate attack. And maybe people don't understand the currents, as because some people trying to figure out, well, how could a body reach all the way to Venezuela? You have anything to add to this?
Well, just that the Orinoco, the flow of the Orinoco River, there is an active current that runs from southeast Trinidad to the southwest tip, Cedrus. And certainly what seems to have been the problem was the canopy. I don't know if people saw the pictures of the damaged boat. There was a canopy, a heavy canopy installed on the boat, and there is reason to suspect that it may not have been a wise idea, and the boat would have capsized with the fishermen in it while fishing. And the current, the boat moved with that current to the southwestern tip of Trinidad. And as people know, the sea would purge itself of foreign objects. And we had identified that if bodies to surface, it would surface on the Venezuelan side, having studied the weather charts and the drift charts. And that's how we were able to pinpoint where these bodies would come ashore.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Hi, good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to Mr. Rambarat. Mr. Rambarat, I want to congratulate you on a very good initiative. It's the best I've heard in years. I would like to get your number, but it's a number that I hope I don't have to ever call. But I wonder if you could give out your numbers to the public, so if anything like this pop up in the future, when you be able to ask it. And again, I want to congratulate you. I don't think there's anything that needs to be done to this organization. Government intervention would only spoil it. And I think they're going just fine. Don't touch something that is working, like as we say, like oil. So, Mr. Rambarat, congratulations. And could I have your number, please? Let's know, please.
Sure. My contact number is 799-1453. And you could have gotten accustomed to being awake at all times of the night. And I'm keeping contact at all times. And with your suggestion, we want to remain, we don't want to go for that government funding. I have looked at organizations, and I think the team understands exactly where we want to be and what we want to be. We regularly have these discussions, and we want to stay as we are, self-funded. We do get donations from time to time. We ask friends to sponsor uniforms and equipment and stuff, and we do get some assistance from friends. Other than that, we want to just be there for families whose loved ones go missing. And I understand why you wanted my number, because what we're seeing, we have something in the team, we're saying, boy, what next? And there it is. We just completed a mission in Guayaguayari, and this morning we have to deal with another family. So it's good to be prepared, keep the number, save it. So in case of an emergency, just give us a call.
Yeah. We are speaking a lot about what you've been engaged in, and that's, searches in, I don't want to say far-flung areas, but in remote areas, not necessarily the path most often taken, and that takes you into some far reaches and so on. But your business, if for want of a different term, is finding and rescuing people if they can be rescued, or retrieving. It's search and rescue, or search and retrieval, whichever one it falls into. We've been seeing recently some devastating scenes coming out of places like Turkey and Syria. 30-something thousand people confirmed dead, the numerous others trapped because of that natural disaster. And you've had, I'm sure, in the 2 years that you've been around, the opportunity to analyze how we do certain things. Should we have a tragedy, God forbid, of anything close to that, do you think we can handle it?
I think no. I think no. I know that the regional corporations have some disaster management unit. That's how disaster, how you handle disasters in Trinidad and Tobago. And there is some training done. But with respect to these major...
I'm not too sure. Okay, Mr. Ramraj, your microphone is muted.
Yep. Hold on a second. I think more training has to be done. The team spoke about the Syria-Turkey tragedy, and we said to ourselves, we wish we were there. We would know how to get about and lend assistance to major tragedies. Yeah. There's a missing girl in Dominica. She's still missing. And when that circumstance arose, we thought, hey, you know, if we were there, we would have been able to assist in Dominica for the search for that missing girl. And then there was a situation in the Caribbean with the volcano eruption in the St. Vincent. And we also thought that...
Mr. Rama, we seem to be having some problems. I don't know if that's calls coming through to your phone, because I have you much longer than I needed to.
Calls coming through.
Yeah.
So I want to apologize.
Well, I think...
To answer your question in a nutshell, I don't think we prepared.
This is where we should probably end our interview, because I know that you have a lot that's on your plate and there are demands for your time all over. But I really want to thank you this morning for being with us here and for explaining in great detail what your organization does, some of your principles, and we wish you, all of us here, you can tell from the listeners that there's great support and admiration for what you and your group are doing. And we wish you guys all the best, guys and girls, all the best in the future moving forward. Thank you for being with us here this morning.
You're welcome, Satish, and you do have an enjoyable day, and it was a pleasure being on 106.5 Freedom Radio this morning.
Nice to have you. We'll chat again soon, I'm sure about that.
Sure.
Yeah, and that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, where we drop the curtains on this interview, there are some organizations and individuals in this country who are providing yeoman service at zero cost to the state. These are the organizations that are leading the way simply because they feel the need to make a difference. Trust me when I say I understand that 100%. I try as best as I can to make the world around me a better place. And the work of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team, we read about it, we hear the stories, we just heard the interview. I don't know that this might sound heartless. You may fully only understand the importance of what they do. God forbid that you may never have to experience this, if they have to assist you. And I'm sure that if we speak to some of the families that they've assisted, you'll hear exactly what I'm telling you being repeated to you. Across this country, we do have many, many organizations that fly under the radar and do so much with so little, just as Hunter Search and Rescue Team is.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.